Hello, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. This is Liberty on the Air, and I'm your host, Dan Fishman. I'm in studio with Matt McLaughlin, Ken Van Tassel, and our producer extraordinaire, Will Anderson, sitting back there rocking the Clapton for us. This is our charity show, our show for the season. You know, it's the season for charity. If you want to talk to us, give us a call, 617-266-6868. Send us a text message at 680-680. Tweet us at libertyontheair.com or join us on our Facebook live stream. You know, it's an interesting thing that people, give more to charity this time of year. 2007 study, University of Indiana, found that charitable organizations get about two-thirds of their donations in between Thanksgiving and New Year's. And that's probably not shocking if you think about it. I know that this time of the year, people are getting bonuses at work. They think about giving more to charity. I usually have checklists. Maybe I'm slightly influenced by the fact that I have a deduction that's coming up as a result of being able to do my tax deductible donations. All those things being said, I need to address a couple issues about charity. And the first thing is I want to play a little charity story. This was on NPR this morning. It comes to us courtesy of StoryCorps. If you're not familiar with StoryCorps, they are chronicling the history of America, one recording at a time. They have recording booths set up all over the country. People come in, they get to tell their stories. And so this is one story of charity at Christmas.
I remember walking up the street Christmas Eve, and I see this kid riding down the street on a bicycle, and I said, boy, that looks like my brother's bike. I get to the house, I say, Wayne, where's your bike? And he said, it was down on the steps. I said, no, it's not. It's gone. It's a small neighborhood, so we find out where the kid lives, who has the bike. And it's a shack in the alley. Now, my brother and I, we're going to beat this boy. But my father was there. He said, just shut up and let me talk. So we knock on the door, and this old black guy comes on a cane. The house is cold. Only light he had was a candle. It was his grandson who had stolen the bike. So he calls him out. He was the same age as my brother, about 10 years old. Little boy starts crying, and he says, I just wanted something for Christmas. So we get the bike, and we leave. We go back to my house. My father tells my mother, and she doesn't say anything. She just starts cutting the turkey in half and all the fixings. She started packing it up. My father went to the coal yard and got a big bag of coal. And then he told my brother, he said, you got another bike, don't you? Brother said, yeah. So we went back with food, coal, so they'd have some heat, and the bike. Little boy just crying. But the thing that moved me the most was the old man. My father gave him $20, which was a huge deal back then, and said, Merry Christmas. He said, thank you, and then just broke down in tears. My father was a chauffeur. My mother was a domestic. So we didn't have a lot of stuff. And that Christmas, I don't even remember what gift I got. But I do know that made me feel better than any Christmas I've ever had.
So that's the Christmas charity story. And, you know, there's a million different variations of them. That was William Lynn Weaver. He went on to become a pretty famous doctor and was the first African-American to integrate his high school in Tennessee. However, that story, that's a Christmas story. That's a charity story. I have to briefly mention the fact that most of the time you hear of getting coal in your stocking as being a terrible thing, but here a bag of coal was a pretty wonderful thing for this
family. I was wondering that when I heard the story about bringing coal.
You know, it's funny, but I've sat by a coal stove. And on a cold day, there's nothing else like it.
Yeah, we used to have one. Folks had one.
So it's definitely and I want to point out that StoryCorps, we're talking about charitable giving, StoryCorps.org, StoryCorps.com. You can find them either place. They take donations. They're recording American history, these wonderful stories, and I would call that a wonderful story. And I'm glad that's going to be entracked and stoned in the Library of Congress for future generations to hear. So as we keep talking about charity this time of year, you know, there's another thing about it is that this time of year in the Judeo-Christian organization, countries that we live in, people tend to give presents. And so we think of charity sometimes as a present, that you are giving somebody this this one-time gift, or you're helping them out right now because you don't want it to be a constant thing. You want to help them out in this one situation to get over this hump. And we've become a little bit cynical about that. And I think with good reason. There was a fascinating story on NPR this morning about disability payments in the United States. And in the past three decades, the number of Americans who are on disability has really skyrocketed. And it's come even as, you know, our hospitals are getting better, our drug treatments are getting better, we can make it so that people can work with disabilities. But in spite of that, there are more and more people. And in fact, last month we hit a record. 14 million people each month get a disability check in the United States, which is pretty astonishing when you consider that the workforce is less than 140 million.
Wow.
So it is, it's a fascinating thing. And I know people who have chronic pain. I know people who have honest to goodness disabilities that prevent them from working. But I can't help thinking that there's something that's being lost in this giant bucket that they're handing cash out of. And I'm not sure what the solution is. And that becomes a tough question for liberty-minded people, because a lot of times we talk about saying that we want to reduce the government. We want to reduce the role the government has, especially in what we consider traditional charity operations, the social safety net. But if we're going to do that, what is going to be the organization that's going to stand up? We got Chris on the line. Chris, you're calling in about the season. What do you got for us?
Hey, Dan. How are you doing?
Hey, thanks for calling, brother.
Yeah. I've been wanting to call in for a couple weeks now. I have a lot on my mind, wanted to get on your show and wanted to get on, get out there in the public and everything.
I appreciate it. Well, tell me yeah. A Christmas charity story.
Christmas charity story. I gotta tell you, I did so for Giving Tuesday this year, I'm not usually a charity giver and everything, but, we had this thing at our work where we, all of us at my work gave $5 at least to a charity.
Nice.
And what I did was I gave $8 because it's been 8 years since my dad, had a 30% chance to live out of a coma to the Epilepsy Foundation. So that's like my biggest charity story from this year.
That's a good story.
I did a lot of toys for tots when I was younger.
Yep.
To military families especially.
So let me ask you: you are a guy who believes in the idea that we should be reducing government, reducing the size of government.
Definitely.
How do you reconcile that with the fact that there really are people who are in need? How are they going to get their needs taken care of if we shrink the size of government?
I think the big part is we need to encourage more private charities out there. We need to encourage that, because the thing is when you have all this government intervention, it's like they don't want the charity and they try to suffer the charity. A big example is a lot of private organizations go out there and try to give food to the homeless. And they can't, because they have to have this food safety regulation.
Right. Yeah, that's certainly something we've talked about a lot. I appreciate your call coming in, Chris. I think that you hit the needle on the head in that a lot of times people get frustrated when they try to be charitable because they run into various regulations. And we've talked about that. I don't want to say to death, but certainly, the situation in New York where restaurants couldn't give away food. But if we push that aside, let's talk about Social Security, right? We're coming up on, I don't remember what it was, 1945, 1946, Truman passed it. Let's say it's the 70th anniversary of Social Security. Number's probably not quite right. But Matt and I were talking about this beforehand. Before Social Security passed, there were a lot of elderly people who had nothing. They were struggling, starving, cold. And you would think that our society, the wealth that we have, right? The wealth in the United States now is unsurpassed at any time in history. The idea that we can't take care of those who took care of us when we were growing up, that somebody's parents are being left behind, left cold, left hungry, I think that's abhorrent to all of us. But if the solution isn't government, what is it going to be? And there's a lot of, I mean, it's a tough question. I mean, some libertarians will tell you, well, I like what government is doing. I just don't like how government is collecting the money. So I wouldn't have a problem if there were a, you know, voluntary social security system in which, you know, you give me an option and say, you know, Daryl Perry famously said in Orlando during the presidential debates, he said, okay, how would I take care of old people? Everybody in this room who loves grandmothers, raise your hand. Of course, everybody raises their hand. And he said, okay, now everybody who'd be willing to give $100 a month to make sure that every grandmother doesn't starve and that every grandmother has enough heat so that she's not cold. And yes, I know your nana's always cold, but everybody would give $100 a month to do that. And everybody raised their hand. So I wouldn't call that government, but if there were an organization that were providing security for those who are socially needful, if there were some sort of voluntary way to do this, do we think that would be better? Or have these situations come into existence, these organizations come into existence because we haven't found any other alternative? We found that when we've left people to their own devices, people don't give enough. We're not charitable enough as a society.
I think there's also something to be said about the idea of the government being sort of centralized and taking care of everything. Like, maybe it's not the best way to do it, but it is sort of like just across the board.
Right.
Right. Like, it is sort of centralized in that way. Like, you're getting Social Security or you're getting some of these other things. And whether it is the best way of doing it, but it is one, and I think maybe why people sort of like it. Also, it's been around for a while, so we're used to it. So getting rid of that is
right.
Although, not really in our minds.
Right. I mean, Social Security hasn't been around that long, but it certainly has been around our entire lives.
What was your guess for how long it's been around for?
I said 70 years.
Actually, I'm looking at it right now. 82 years.
Okay.
4 months, 2 days.
Fair enough. So I know that Truman signed it, but we have a it's one of those things that it's an American invention, the idea of Social Security. But it's a broader idea that we've always known we're supposed to take care of our elders. So
right, the question is, are we supposed to take care of people's elders at the point of a gun is the real question.
Well, that's exactly what I was talking about, is that if we were you probably don't have – I mean, the whole grandmother thing. We don't have an objection to taking care of people. We have an objection to how it's funded. If I'm taking money from you to – if I'm robbing Peter to pay Paul, is that charity? If my end action is a charitable action, does that justify any means to take it? Or am I, in fact, compromising our charity? Am I compromising the charitable actions by going out there and saying, you know what? You're not capable of deciding how your money should be spent. Only I can decide what's morally right, who's benefit, and who are the people who are actually going to have a Merry Christmas. Little Blues Travelers bringing us back. Ken, we got messages coming in off of the Facebook live stream.
Yeah, we got Sydney Hastings coming to us. She says, the problem with the problem in general is voter turnout, chronic apathy, people not coming out to vote, people not caring about where their tax dollars are going and who's making these laws.
You know, it's a fascinating point. And that leads to a big question. Why are people disengaged? Why are we disengaged from caring about each other? Why are we disengaged from caring about our government? What's happened along that way? Is there an argument to be made that government has trained us to be apathetic?
They're the abstraction layer between.
I would think so. Given. I mean, there was the whole thing during when Obama was running. They had this whole series. I forget what it was. But they had this sort of like this cartoon series about this girl, this young girl who like – every moment in her life, the government was there to take care of her.
Right.
Like that was sort of the lesson. I forget what the girl's name was, but it was
Hillary Clinton.
It was kind of creepy. Like everything was there. Like, you know, it was right. Like, you know, it.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed nice. And if you read it, you were probably like, oh, but you could definitely look at it as sort of like a statist. Sure. You know,
for some people, that's heaven. For others, it's heck. Speaking of heck, we got Terry calling in from Duxbury, the most charitable thing to do. Hey, Terry, how's it going?
Yeah, hey, Dan, thanks for having me on your show. I think this is a little bit of a story about charity, and I think you were involved in this story. It was a lady on Facebook I was talking to. I believe she was from New Mexico,
yep.
And I think she was African-American. And she, you know, she was kind of telling me she was down and out and that she had a sort of a dead-end job and she wasn't getting paid very much and she couldn't really understand how libertarians could help her and that sort of thing. So I got involved in a long discussion with her, trying to give her hope and saying how she could break away and maybe, you know, learn some skills or start her own business. But the impression I got from talking to her that, first of all, the cost to start a business and, you know, the overall complications and regulatory pieces of doing that was very daunting to her. So, you know, my piece of charity was, of course, to try to tell her to pursue her dream and to break away from, you know, the confines that she found herself in. But I think at the same time, the most charitable thing we could do is reduce taxes and regulation so that people who are not doing that well can find their entrepreneurial spirit and can go ahead and, you know, pursue their goals.
Well, let's take one example. If we were to cut out the food stamp program right now,
mm-hmm.
What do you think would step up for that? I mean, we're talking, you know, $60 billion a year that is being used to buy, hopefully, food.
Well, I think presumably if the federal government got out of the food stamp program, it would be obvious that the states would probably take up the slack and try to provide those kind of services and probably actually have to raise taxes to do that. So I guess one question you have is, should this be done at the federal level? Or it should be done more locally at the state or even the town level where people, you know, where people are closer to the problem and can understand the needs at that particular level. I mean, what are your thoughts around that?
Right. Well, you know, I would say that I definitely think that that's one of those situations that local oversight makes a big difference. And because we feel responsible to our neighbors, we don't feel responsible to people who live 100 miles away. And so when there's a local food drive, people tend to give. When there's a need, however, if you live in, you know, if you live in Newton, right, there's not a lot of people who really need your food out in Newton, the area that I live in on the North Shore. You know, we have some people who are struggling, but it's a generally affluent neighborhood. If I see a food drive there, I know the food is not going to people in my neighborhood, but that's okay. I'm actually happy to contribute. And, you know, later on in the segments, I want people to call in and start talking about what are their favorite charities. But for me, the ultimate charity, the one that always makes the most difference, is what I was talking about with Terry. I mentioned food stamps, but for me, it's food in general. And so I mentioned to people, I think Feeding America, which is an entirely private organization, is one of the best places that you can put your money. Because in this country, with this wealth, there's no reason for anybody. There's no reason for children to go hungry. There's no reason for the elderly to go hungry. You hear stories about elderly people eating cat food out of cans. The stories aren't made up. You know, there is a reality to it. And when there's nobody looking out for you, who's it going to be? And I hope the point that I'm getting to is that if you're a liberty-minded person and you want it to not be government, you have to show that there's an alternative. You have to find a way to give of yourself, because that's the real element of charity. And I'm going to just tell a quick little anecdote around this. At one point in time, I was in Europe. I was a teenager. I was 19 years old. A guy came up to me, spoke great English. He said, hey, look, I can tell you're an American. I'm an American too. I'm supposed to get paid. I'm working as a contractor right now, but the check that I have I can't cash it in any of the banks. It's Sunday. The embassy is closed. Can you lend me $20? And so I gave him $20. He's like, thanks. Thanks a lot. He's like, give me your address. I'll send it back. I'm like, pay it forward. It's fine with me.
And then after he left, I started thinking, geez, did he hustle me? You know, he had this great story. And I came to the conclusion, and I went back and forth about it. And I thought, oh, if I got hustled, I feel stupid. And I came to the conclusion that if I felt like I was being hustled, then it wasn't actually charity. Welcome back. WRKO 680 AM, the talk of Boston. You can call us at 617-266-6868. Tweet us at libertyontheair.com. Text message 680-680. Or where most people are getting comments in, the Facebook live stream.
Smoke signals.
Smoke signals, yeah, always work well. Actually, I should say most. We've had a fair bit of callers. I'm hoping we're going to get more callers during this segment because I want to talk more about charities, but, you know, over the break, Matt kind of called me out on something. And
yeah, Dan, I wanted to sort of bring up a point is that I don't think people necessarily look at Social Security or food stamps or WIC or what have you as charity. They can sort of, you know, if you're giving to a charity and they are going out and giving to people, they sort of serve the same function. But the government, I don't think people look at it as charity, so to speak. And, you know, part of it is Social Security, something obviously you've paid into.
Right.
So that is sort of
– It could be your money.
Your money, you know, and it is, you know, and to an extent –
It's actually all been lent out to do other things with. But
It's in a lockbox. I agree.
Yeah. It's – A box with a giant hole in the bottom of it.
Right. But I mean, in theory, right, that's the idea is that we are actually socializing the risk to provide security to people and that everybody is paying into this pool. And so it is, at least in theory, meant to be an insurance policy. If you don't need Social Security to take care of you, you still get it. That's something that people are talking about to solve the problem is that
– It's wealth redistribution though is what all of these programs are, right?
It is wealth redistribution, but it's wealth redistribution with the idea that you don't know what your needs are going to be. And so you are saving away against a future accident. And there's a risk that, yeah, you might end up super wealthy and not need this money. But if you didn't end up super wealthy – so, you know, I have a family member who her husband died when he was 59. There was no pension. And she didn't work that much. So her Social Security check is not a great deal, but it's enough. And so, you know, she lives in upstate New York. And as a result, she can live relatively cheaply. You know, she can afford to buy groceries and, but she's still working pretty hard at 77 years old, hauling wood into heat this fireplace and stuff like that. And it's Social Security that makes that happen. Social Security and, you know, her family who gives her money. But they played into the Social Security system, not thinking that they would ever need it, right? When her husband was alive, you know, he was very well – he wasn't well off, but, you know, he was a mechanical engineer. He had a good salary. They had a comfortable living, never expecting that Social Security was going to be what would provide for them. So Matt's point, I think, is a very good one, that people don't think of Social Security as anything other than an insurance policy that people are paying into.
But the other systems are a little different. I mean, Social Security is, you know, essentially the government saying, we're going to take a little bit of your paycheck and sort of invest it for you, take it away and give it back to you later.
Invest. Yeah.
That's a very sort of broad –
Invest in the country.
It's a sort of broad thing, but, you know, you're at least paying into
ordinance.
It. But or things
– Invest in other people's country by depositing metal there.
But food stamps and things like that are not – It's not something you pay into unless – I mean, you're paying taxes,
right?
If you're doing something. But that is, you know – but if the question sort of is, what are we doing – like, how are we taking care of the needy, which is where charity a lot could come into play, that's sort of a different story. That's sort of a – you know, the point. Can sort of private institutions or charities fill that gap?
Well, and I think the biggest – thing people miss is when they talk about private charities is that they are directly competing with the biggest monopoly of force there is, which is the United States federal government.
Right.
They are competing. Charities have to raise money through voluntary contributions.
Right.
The government has the luxury of pointing guns at people and saying, you owe us this much money, and if we need more to fund our programs, we'll just take that much more.
Right.
So it's hard to say that we need to get private charities to do better before we can get cut government, Because I think it's exactly the opposite.
Well,
we need to cut government to actually give the charities the room to fill the demand for their services.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that when you talk about filling demand, when there's a gap for food, it means people go hungry. So I would rather have a surplus, but I do believe that the programs have gotten out of control. So right now, there are 47 million Americans who are getting food assistance. 47 million, okay? That is, you know, that's 33 million. That's roughly a sixth. Let's call it a seventh. A seventh of the population. That's pretty astonishing. Again, considering the wealth that is here, you know, these people who – and
– how much do you think of that – I mean, it's a conversation not all people always like, but how many of that is, you know – to an extent fraudulent, do you think? And I, you know, that's a tough question to, yeah. I mean, we probably don't have all the stats or all the information, but I think one of the questions, that maybe these systems could work much better if they were, you know, if they were truly giving to the really needy, which I guess is the real question. How do you decide who is needy and, you know, how many people are, and, you know.
I mean, isn't food stamps, isn't that the ultimate in need? Nobody needs a television. Nobody needs to buy cigarettes. But people need food. And so if we're providing food for them, I don't know. I often think that, you know, when we talk about whether or not it's fraudulent, there's no question in my mind that there are people who are fraudulently getting food stamps. They are using them to supplement their income so that they can buy a big fancy flat screen TV or right. something like that.
But that goes back to my point again. Who has the incentive to try to make sure that the recipients of their benefits are not being fraudulent? A private charity who has limited resources or the federal government who can just raise the amount they need to cover that gap year after year? Who is more incentivized to do a better job there?
I can't argue with Ken's logic. I mean, fundamentally, it's an interesting point. And then the next question I would ask is that are we doing people a disservice by making their lives too easy? By providing them with too much charity.
Again, I don't think any libertarian should have a problem with that if the money was being provided through voluntary contributions.
Right.
Making people's lives easier voluntarily is a great thing.
Right. Well,
but the real root of the issue is the idea of taking money from people by force.
Right.
And then giving it to other people.
So, I mean, that leads us to
some who need it, some who don't.
That leads us to the classic libertarian conversation, you know, if the purpose of our science and our technology is to someday have machines lift the burden of work from our shoulders, what will that mean? People can have easier lifestyles. At that point in time,
it'll be like that new Matt Damon movie where they all shrink down really small so they can live, like, you know, their little bottle of vodka becomes a giant
yes.
a tank of vodka.
Yes. I can't imagine where that movie's going to go, but it doesn't matter.
No one else is talking about that movie either. I think we can move on from that.
Okay. Yeah. When we talk about charity, right, and we talk about the needs, and we talk about libertarians, what should be our attitude to the idea that – I mean, you hear some people say that libertarians shouldn't be involved in charity at all because it weakens society, and some people who say libertarians actually should be at the forefront – because we want to prove that the state is not required. Because some people say, you know what? If there's not any organization out there that's going to take care of the poor, then that does justify active intervention by government.
Right. I think libertarians need to actually take a look in the long mirror. Play for the long game and realize that we need to invest in charities, but strategically, ones that are actually being innovative.
Right.
And bringing charity into the 21st century.
Well, you know, there are plenty of examples of private charities doing amazing things. Probably the best one is the March of Dimes. Now I wish I had prepped that clip beforehand because there's this amazing commercial that ran on the movies in the 40s with Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland. Mickey Rooney buys a ice cream for himself and Judy at the bicycle guy, the good humor man, and he asked for his change in dimes. And Judy's like, oh, what'd you do that for? He's like, I'm going to send these dimes off to President Roosevelt so that we can cure polio. Now, that sounds like government. President Roosevelt was only acting as the figurehead. There was no government involvement in the March of Dimes.
Wait, they weren't trying to get President Roosevelt himself to cure polio?
No, because he had polio, Ken. He was giving polio to everybody else. No.
In small doses.
No. But the March of Dimes was a private organization, and they cured polio. They funded Jonas Salk, his lab. They actually funded another scientist as well. And in fact, the Salk vaccine was controversial, and you know, some people are going to complain about vaccines, but yeah,
that's why everyone has autism now.
Yeah, exactly right. In fact, you know, let's hear Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney talking about the March of Dimes.
Can we have 2 cones, please? And I like a diamond change, too.
Are you saving them, Mickey?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give mine to President Roosevelt.
President? Why, Mickey?
Yes, you see, Judy, I've got my envelope made out right here. It's all ready to go. See for yourself.
Oh, I know. That's a March of Dimes, the infantile paralysis fund.
That's right. And, Judy, when I spend a dime on myself or some little luxury like this, I always think about those unfortunate kids and how far just a dime will go toward helping.
Gee, Mickey, we don't know how lucky we are and how much we have to be thankful for with our health and our happiness.
Classic drama there.
Do all that we can to help all of those
who you know, that, but that's the whole point of it. It's that there's a point in time in which private charities, people felt obligated to pitch in to solve things. And so I'll tell a story from my personal life. I was involved, I think I've told the story probably on the air before, so I like the fact that I can tell my story over and over again to thousands of people instead of just the people in my personal life. The Jet Foundation works against Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. We started going to this charity 20-odd years ago. We're seeing real results. Duchenne's is a particularly terrible form of muscular dystrophy, only affects boys, and essentially they don't grow muscles, and so it's usually fatal by their 20s, usually by the time they're 20. And in this case, over the years that we went, we saw progress made in the lab based on the money that we were giving. And it was inspirational to see that. When I saw my money making a difference, that encouraged me to be more charitable in other things that I do.
Right.
And so I think that Ken's point that we don't see that when government intervenes from people being charitable has actually discouraged charity in our country.
So actually, have you – on that note, I was talking about innovation in charities. Have you heard about charity water before?
No.
So I really – I saw this really interesting video on YouTube from L2 Inc. So you might be familiar with them. It's this guy, Scott, that does these great videos on financial investing. But he had a short profile of the founder of this company. And basically, this guy founded this charity that tries to bring water to people around the world that don't have water. And
okay.
It's actually astounding how many people in the world don't have access to clean water. Yep. So you're talking about food. Water is arguably even more important.
Yep.
Innovation and charity is something that they focused on, and they do three things. They surveyed and found what are the three things that people hate most about charities. One is that it's hard to see the impact of their donation. And what Charity Water does, they actually allow you to track how your money has influenced their projects around the world. Second is they don't know how much of their money is actually going to the project versus going to pay, you know, overhead costs and things like that. They put all their financial information available to all their donors. So they have complete transparency, something that you definitely don't get with the federal government.
Not at all.
And then lastly, 100% of the money they raise goes to their water projects because they have private donors and only the private donor money pick up. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, see,
I think that's a great point. I think there's a lot of – I remember I worked for a large bank years ago, and there was a charity. Every year they made a push to get a bunch of donations. Of course, they wanted everyone to donate, and they had people come and give talks and talk about what they were doing. And it got to the point where I was very turned off by this charity, that how much money were they spending to come in, and then I would get these like passive aggressive notes left on my desk about how I could very easily just fill out this form, and they would take a little bit of money out of my paycheck and would go right to them.
Right.
And would go right to the charity. And it was, you know, I get it, you know, it's, you know, they're trying to reach as many people, but how much money, you know, I know some private charities have been sort of taken to task. People, you know, they've raised, you know, like, no, you know, 30 cents of every dollar they raise actually goes to the charity, and so much. And obviously these things have overhead. They have a business to run.
But you're right. There are people who are making a huge amount of money by administering charities. I recommend everybody charitynavigator.org. It's a wonderful website, and it tells you how much of your donation the charity is spending on administration, how much they're spending on actually delivering services. And that's a good thing to know, because sadly, there are charities out there that are terrible. I will go ahead and say that people, if they look up the overhead for the United Way, they're going to be shocked to find out what the overhead is.
That's the charity I was talking about.
Exactly right. Right. And they tend to, and they had a racket, essentially. They would go around in companies and expect people to donate, when in reality, you know, they were very inefficient. And to Ken's point, when people have oversight and they can see their money being spent, then it works better.
Right. But my point is, libertarians can lead the way by investing in charities such as the one I just said that puts their financial data available. And by doing that, we'll force the old charities to either come with us to this 21st century,
right,
and reveal their financial information, or die off and allow these new innovative charities to go
forward. And that's one of the things that actually you can find on Charity Navigator, is there are quote unquote charities that refuse to open their books up. So they don't tell people what they're doing. And if they choose not to do that, Charity Navigator usually gives them a terrible rating, just based on the fact that they're not being transparent. There's a few other so in that vein, you know, there are a lot of other charities that aren't even what I would consider traditional charities. Something I've been giving money to recently is a charity called Kiva. Kiva is micropayments. And essentially, you find somebody who's applied for a loan somewhere around the world. And it's not a big loan. It's usually like $25 for a woman to buy dyes because she's a weaver in Africa, or $100 for somebody in Appalachia to buy a new set of wheels for his new set of tires for his truck, for his delivery business. And then he pays them back. So it's a very small loan for people who can't get credit. You make a very small profit on it. It's like a 1%. So you're not making a tremendous amount of money, but you're actually helping somebody be entrepreneurial. And that's not actually charity. So if you think about it, in many ways, that's the highest form of charity, to help somebody else earn a living. So we're coming to the end of the show. I thought I'd give a shout out to a couple of charities that have always been near and dear to my heart. You know, I mentioned Kiva, which isn't really a charity. It's micro giving. But I want to shout out to Heifer, H-E-I-F-E-R. They have a bunch of unique programs. But one of the things that I love that they do is you can go into buying livestock for families. So family in Africa, you can buy them a goat, sheep, something that will help to increase their prosperity, either through the fact that they'll be able to, you know, breed the goat for milk, and also hair, sheep for wool, cows, all those things. It's always seemed like a very unique way to charity, and something that made a lot of sense to me. And then another one that's been near and dear to my heart, Catholic Charities of the North Shore. So, you know, as I've said before on the show, I grew up Jewish, but I was introduced to Catholic Charities by a friend of mine, and they're just doing amazing work. And so, although I disagree with some of the things that the church does.
You know what they say about Jewish charities?
What?
I can't say that on there.
Oh, Scott, you can call in now. Scott, if you're out there, it's a little late. Call in tomorrow. Call in next week. But all that being said, I'll go back to that. So just Catholic Charities of the North Shore, and I'm thinking. So I did grow up somewhat religiously. And in Judaism, we have this idea of levels of charity. It's called tzedakah. And I always thought it was funny that they had sort of a grading system, but like the worst level of charity is when you give a donation, but you resent it. You're like, here you go, take it. That's the worst level of charity, but it still counts as charity. The next one is like, okay, you say, oh, here you go, but you give them less than what you really could afford to give them. And it goes all the way up to the next to top charity is when you give charity, you don't know who gives it, who you're giving it to, and the person who receives it doesn't know who gives it to them, so that they don't have to feel indebted to you. They just know that somebody's out there looking out for them, and you don't know who you've benefited. You just know that you're doing a good thing.
That's how Uncle Sam works.
Well, and then the top level of charity and tzedakah is to provide somebody with a mean to earn their own living, to provide them with a job or to help them find a job. So all that being said, you guys have any?
That's not how Uncle Sam works.
You guys have any charities you want to give shout outs to?
Yeah. I mean, I'll just throw it back to Charity Water. I think you should go check them out. I think water is a very important resource, and it's staggering the number of people without water around the world that that need access to it.
All right. And it sounds like a really good charity, too, in terms of oversight. So, Matt, what do you got for us?
I'm just going to say don't give to United Way.
Don't give to United Way is – that's good.
.com.
Yeah. I'm amazed that site's not there. I will tell you that I have – you know, if you give to Salvation Army and, you know, they're out there ringing, they are doing the hard work, people should just be aware of what they're giving to. Salvation Army does many worthwhile things, but they're not a charity. They're a church. If you read their mission statement, they are all about redeeming people through Christ. That is their message. If that's what you want to give money to, go for it. Just people should be aware of what they're giving to. And that's sort of like what you were complaining about, is that when they were pressing you to give to the United Way, you actually had no idea where your money was going.
Actually, don't give to the UnitedWay.com is available right now. So by the end of the show, it probably won't be. But for $11.99, GoDaddy will let you put whatever you like on that website. So.
Interesting. I'm not going to take it that far. I think that now they've had the threat of the Liberty on the Air listener boycott.
Yeah, they're totally going to change their model now.
I think plenty of charities out there. Unfortunately, I know a couple of small local ones whose names I unfortunately cannot remember. I'm racking my brain. But I think those are like, you know, the people are really right out there on the street. I think there's people, you know, it all depends what you're trying to, you know, what are your interests in charity, you know, to an extent. Like, you know, there are, you know, like, you know, some of the stuff like Amazon Prime, you can there are plenty of charities there that you can donate. So when you buy something, money goes to them.
It's good. I
donate to a no-kill cat shelter over here in Austin.
That's right. A great one. Also, you know, chances are pretty good at your grocery store. There's a local food bank. One other thing that I'd throw out there is that sometimes you can give of yourself. Chances are pretty good that you're going to get in the mail, or you've gotten recently in the mail, a brochure from your local community college. If you have an advanced degree, they need teachers. That's something that you can do that's incredibly charitable. Go down or – chances are pretty good. If you have a college degree, you look around at the local shelters, they're offering basic math classes and they need people to come in there and teach them. So if you can do that, if you can give of yourself, that's the ultimate in the human experience, I think. Finding a way to connect ourselves to each other. That's what I think charity is about, building that sort of relationship. And the idea that you and I, we're all in this together. For me, that's what this season is about. Sort of the shared human experience. The shared experience of being on planet Earth and finding a way to use charity to connect to our fellow men.
Good night, Skippy.
People talk about sin taxes. The government taxes cigarettes because it says smoking is bad, and they want less people to smoke. The government taxes alcohol because it says drinking is bad, and they want less people to drink. So why is the government taxing income? Join that discussion and lots more, and listen live to Liberty on the Air with your host, Dan Fishman, every Saturday night at 11 p.m. right here on The Voice of Boston, AM 680, WRKO.